WABC Talk Radio 77 in New York, the crown jewel of American radio. This is your Saturday morning radio extravaganza with James Golden, a.k.a. Snerdly. Bo Snerdly, we're here for 2 hours, and we'd like you to join us, if you'd like. You can do that by calling 800-848-WABC, 800-848-9222. We have so much to discuss, and today, in the second hour, a treat. We have a treat each hour, but in the second hour, a treat. Secretary of State, well, former now, but still, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is scheduled to join us. And if you've been following the news this week, you know how timely this is, because John Kerry has been in the news for, how shall we say, allegations of questionable behavior with Iran. And John Kerry over the years has seemed to be fixated with doing all he can to make sure that American interests with Iran are not served. With this phony Iran peace deal with nuclear weapons, where we gave Iran back billions of dollars, snuck into the country on pallets, cash money, in the middle of the night with private plane, well, with a government fleet of planes. And now, former Secretary of State John Kerry is alleged to have shared secrets with Iran about Israel's covert missions in Syria. This is serious stuff. It erupted midweek, and by the end of the week, the mainstream media was pretending the story didn't exist. But we're going to talk about that, and also the record of the Trump administration when it comes to foreign policy with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo in the second hour. Our first hour, later in the hour, we're going to speak with domestic policy advisor Diana Mee about the speech, the Biden speech. And believe it or not, there was a lot that was said that needs attention focused on it. If Joe Biden and the Democrats get their way, based on what they're considering with this speech, you will not recognize the country that you are living in. And you will be paying for the country that you will be living in, but don't recognize. Also this week, big news, Rudolph Giuliani had his office searched by the FBI. And I want to, without making accusations, ask a question and ask those of you who've been following what is going on with the Department of Justice, of course the FBI is contained within that structure, whether you have any confidence left. We still have no report from Durham on the shenanigans that happened with the false Russian collusion story against President Trump. Here we are years later. Trump is out of office. There's still no report on that. There has never been any real accountability on the false information that was provided to FISA judges to secure warrants against the Trump campaign. No one has been really held accountable for any of it. No one in the Obama administration that orchestrated the spying on an American presidential campaign has been called to account. Yet you have the FBI under Merrick Garland sending out their force to hit Rudy Giuliani's office. The Hill says that little is known about the scope of the investigation against Giuliani, but reporting suggests that the focus could be on Giuliani's work on behalf of foreign clients, including Ukraine, and his failure to register as a foreign agent while serving as the president's personal attorney. Huh. Two words. Hunter Biden. Giuliani's home and law offices were searched at dawn on Wednesday like he's some kind of common criminal, with FBI agents seizing as many as eight of Giuliani's electronic devices. And The Hill says this is a remarkable development. It is remarkable. It is remarkable to see how partisan, in my view, in my opinion, the investigatory world has become. We still don't have an accounting of the emails that another former Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, sent using declassified devices. That is against federal law. There are people who have served jail time for their mishandling of classified documents. We still don't have an accounting as to the emails that were on Hillary Clinton's private email server, which is also a violation of federal law. The FBI and the DOJ seemed unconcerned about that. We have the FBI and the DOJ doing everything they can to bring those people who protested and who led and who, what is the insurrection, as it's being called, of January 6th. Those people are being found wherever they are in the country. Many of them are already in jail awaiting trial. We have no such effort taking place to find out who these masked perpetrators are who vandalize federal buildings in Portland and in Seattle and in other country and other places around the country. There seems to be no effort being made to find who these violent, quote unquote, insurrectionists are. Meanwhile, in his state of the sleepy administration speech, and I talked to my good friend Louis Gohmert yesterday. One of the things Louis told me, Congressman Louis Gohmert, 1st District, Texas, one of the things Louis mentioned to me, he says, you know, this was not a joint session of Congress, and it should never be framed as that. This was invited guest. Louis is a member of Congress, as are many. He said unless he got, as other members of Congress did, a written communication from Pelosi's office telling them that unless they had received their invitation from either Pelosi, Biden, whoever sent it out, they were not to come near the Capitol after 5 o'clock that day. Now, these are elected members of Congress who are being told you cannot attend. You, an elected member of Congress, cannot attend what is supposed to be a joint session of Congress. Only selected elected representatives were allowed to come. And yet, this is business as usual. Well, this is not usual. This may be a first, a historic first, but the only history that the mainstream news reported was that you had two women sitting behind Joe Biden. Okay, that's nice. But the fact that you have an empty house, almost empty house chamber, where members of Congress are told they cannot attend what is supposed to be a joint session of Congress, had no reporting at all on its historical significance. That makes no sense. New York City, my friends, my fellow New Yorkers, we should be celebrating. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, on Thursday, Emperor, Lord Most High, His Reverence, His Almighty, His Worshipfulness, Bill de Blasio, says that he is going to allow New York to reopen again on July 1st. His Lordship, the de Blasio, his most wonderful highness, Bill de Blasio, the first Praetorian leader of New York City, has said that he, in his infinite and merciful wisdom, will allow those of you who work for a living, whose businesses have been ruined, to pick up the pieces, to get your crumbs off the ground, and open your businesses again on July 1st. Isn't he wonderful? Isn't he the most merciful? Isn't he kind? Of course, he was on TV when he made the announcement that Morning Joe show. He said, this is going to be the summer of New York City. You're going to see amazing activities, cultural activities coming back. I think people are going to flock to New York City because they want to live again. Our plan is to fully reopen New York City on July 1st. Well, gee, thanks. Bill de Blasio and Andrew Cuomo have killed American businesses by the score. They have ruined a city. They have ruined a state unnecessarily. All you have to do is look in contrast to the way that Governor Kristi Noem in South Dakota and Governor Ron DeSantis in Florida managed this coronavirus without killing the economies of the state. I would love to hear from those of you who have been affected by this shutdown here in the world's greatest city, New York City, today, with what you think of your emperor, Bill de Blasio, saying that he's going to finally allow you to live your life again. If you want to join us, please feel free. 800-848-WABC. That's 848-9222. This is James Golden. When we get back, we're going to talk about the Uncle Tim business that happened after the Biden speech. A little bit further in the show, past the half-hour mark, we'll bring in domestic policy advisor Diana Mee, and then we're going to go through a little bit of the Biden speech and what the implications are. But your phone calls are welcome on any and all of these topics. We will get to your phone calls. And remember, next hour, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo joins us. Stay with me. James Golden, Bo Snerdly, a.k.a. Snerdly. WABC Talk Radio 77. We'll be right back.
Every day I write the list of reasons why I still believe they do exist. A thousand beautiful things.
WABC in New York.
And even though it's hard to see, the glass is full and not half empty.
James Golden, a.k.a. Snerdly, with you.
So light me up like the sun.
Annie Lennox, A Thousand Beautiful Things, and that is a beautiful song. And there are a thousand beautiful things every day to look at. There are also some things that are not so beautiful. One of them was the left's vile reaction to Tim Scott's speech. And this was the rebuttal speech to Joe Biden's speech before selected members of Congress this week. Now, usually, let me be really frank about this. I hate these speeches. I don't care who they are. I don't care who makes them. They never go right, usually. I mean, I have memories of Senator Marco Rubio slurping the water down because his throat was dry. I mean, I have such empathy for that. That is really a tough one. You know, your throat's parched, you have to talk, but you can barely talk. What do? You're on camera. And then, who remembers any of the other speeches? Has there ever been a rebuttal speech from that you remember? To me, this is a crazy idea. What should happen is the president speaks, And then that's it. Then you go to the pundits telling you everything that you just saw as if you didn't see it. And that should be the end of it. But no, we have to have a rebuttal speech. Well, this year, this rebuttal speech from Tim Scott, the left went nuts. The thing that offended them most was that Tim Scott said America's not a racist country, and we're not. Of course, Democrats now, quietly, some of them, like Biden, are saying, oh, well, you know, we aren't really a racist country. Well, that's all they do is attack us. Or in this country is a bunch of racists, a bunch of bigots. So it's no wonder that when someone says this is not a racist country, the left erupts because their sensibilities have been shattered. And David Hassani in the New York Post has a brilliant column, The Left's Vile Reaction to Tim Scott's Speech. He starts looking at, for instance, the MSNBC so-called journalist Nicole Wallace, who argued that his speech was delivered from a planet where facts don't matter. Facts don't matter. That describes MSNBC to a nutshell. And it is a shame to see what happened to that formerly great news. I remember when Chet Huntley and David Brinkley were on NBC, and it was a real news network. Now, this is not even a shadow of a news network. This is a disgrace that's allowed to be on TV for some reason that almost, you talk about on a different planet. MSNBC is the different planet where facts don't matter. But you also had, in this, there was an article from, who wrote this article? I think Tom Tillerson, yeah, he did. Tom Tillerson wrote this article from BizPack Review. Joy Behar has nerve to lecture Tim Scott and comprehending systematic racism. So, Joy Behar, I have two things. One, he's talking and railing against, he's talking about not obsession with the Republicans right now, that Biden is not reaching across the aisle and child poverty in half. And you look around the chamber and nobody on the Republican side. Joy doesn't even make sense. But then she lectured Tim Scott on racism. The closest Joy Behar has ever gotten to understanding what it is like to be an African-American person in America and dealing with racism is when she dressed up in blackface and put on an Afro wig and pretended to be black for a few minutes. Which, of course, she's never taken any heat from. And look, I know Joy. I like Joy Behar. As a person. But as a political analyst on anything? Seriously? Joy Behar? No. Today, there's a story from Fox News. Media analyst Howard Kurtz, a Texas Democrat official, is facing calls to step down. He called Tim Scott an Oreo. Yeah, for those of you unfamiliar with that particular slur, black on the outside, white on the inside. It's a pejorative slur. Been around forever. This guy is just Lamar County Democrat Party Chair Gary O'Connor wrote that reference in a now deleted Facebook post referring to his rebuttal to Joe Biden's congressional address. Selected congressional address. This is incredible. It really is incredible. You have members of Congress, left wing show host, assailing a United States senator who has a remarkable story of personal achievement. And these are the people who continue to lecture America about civility, about how we should get along with each other. And the only thing that they see fit to do, and by the way, this term Uncle Tim was allowed to stay on Twitter to demean Senator Scott for over 13 hours. The very Twitter that throws off conservatives that they say are violating their hate speech rules. This was nothing but pure hate directed at Tim Scott. It is hate directed at him from Joy Behar, who should apologize for her ignorant remarks. It is hate directed at him from Lamar County Democrat Party Chair Gary O'Connor, who should be forced to apologize for his hateful remarks. It is hate on the part of Democrat pundits over at MSNBC who continue to rail on a guy because he is a black man and doesn't think like they think, and he's had the audacity to actually make a speech criticizing President Biden's policies. Normal political discourse, and they can't handle it. America, look closely at this. Look at who the racists are. They say that they are for equality. They are not. If a black person in America chooses to have a different thought than they do, that person is no longer equal. They are the subject to scorn and ridicule along racial lines, not even policy. We're talking about racial lines. They come up with this Uncle Tom, Uncle Tim, Oreo. The only thing that they didn't go was the N-word, because they're too scared to do that, even though that's what I bet meant. Well, I shouldn't. That is perhaps what some of them are really thinking. You are witnessing, America, who the racists and the bigots are, who the intolerant racists are in America. They are on parade over at NBC Network. They are on parade inside shows like The View. They are on parade on Twitter. These people do not want African Americans to be equal. African Americans are not allowed to have an equal voice in politics if that voice is not what these people want to hear. They are not for equality. They do not believe that people should be treated civilly. They do not believe that black elected officials who are in a Republican Party, who are in a different party, should be treated as equal citizens in the United States. They are bigoted, and their bigotry is on parade, and it is unchecked. The same executives at MSNBC who claim that they're against intolerance, who put up with Joy Reid every day, who put up with the stuff that comes out of the mouth of Nicole Wallace, are the first ones to rail against what they consider to be racism. Take a mirror, NBC. Look at yourself. You are allowing racism to run rampant on the air, and you should be ashamed of yourself. Joy, you may be a nice person, but you need to check yourself when you're not in blackface with an Afro wig on, and check yourself about what you really think. You are not the African queen, sweetheart. You don't get to decide what every black man in America thinks. Tim Scott has a right to say and think what he wants to without being subject to the ridicule that you throw on him. And for those of you on Twitter who have such ill manners as to sit and call this man, this distinguished man, these horrible names, karma is real. WABC Talk Radio 77, your calls coming up. Also coming up, domestic policy advisor Diana Mee. We'll be right back. Crown jewel of American radio. Saturday morning, the Saturday morning radio extravaganza with yours truly, James Golden. Now, look, folks, you have to get the WABC radio app. Keep WABC with you all day long. And remember, tonight, Music Radio, Cousin Brucey, with Music Radio WABC, Tony Orlando. We have Joe Piscopo. I mean, there is so much going on here. During the week, you have to check out Charlie Kirk, Rita Cosby, WABC. You can keep WABC with you all day long. You will never, ever, ever be bored. This song, Caught Up in the Rapture, one of my good friends who is no longer with us, Gary Glenn, wrote this song. Beautiful song. We have with us domestic policy advisor Diana Mee. Diana, welcome. A little bit early this week.
Yes, we all woke up early for your show. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so this was the big week. Joe Biden's big address before selected members of Congress. And suppose that this was, this is what the New York, the Washington Post? No, I'm sorry, Politico. Politico says Joe Biden gave the most ideological, ambitious speech of any Democratic president in generations. Do you agree with that?
Don't you love the word ambitious? First of all, I have to say Happy May Day, which is so appropriate for this discussion of the Biden speech. This is International Workers' Day, which is also known as the International Day of Struggle and Celebration of the Workers for Peace and Socialism. All around the world, socialists celebrate this day as their accomplishments for the worker.
Oh, so this is Commie Day.
Yes, it's Commie Day.
It's Commie Day around the world.
About the Biden speech, it's appropriate.
Okay.
And yes, the media celebrated Biden's radicalism, and in CNN actually said that he showcased his moderate radicalism, which is an inventive term, which I think is really interesting.
But moderate radicalism?
Well, I think they are delighted at the fact that Joe comes across to the average person, or they think he does, as a sort of regular guy, not a radical, even though his ideas are very radical, especially the ideas he laid out in his state of the whatever it was, the state of his mind speech last week. So,
well, okay, yes, so Politico says that Politico says that the speech was another marker suggesting that the ideological pendulum in the country has swung, and that in the closing in of Biden's half century, this is his half century in Washington. And for his part, Biden believes that people are now ready to support aggressively activist government. Are people in America ready to support these liberal activists and their plans for everything from paying off college loans, spending almost $2 trillion in yet another welfare program that we don't know where the money will be going and where the money is coming from, on top of the almost $2 trillion they want to spend on infrastructure? Diana, where does all this money come from, and where is it going if they get what they want?
Well, I think you're right. I think that really we had the $1.9 trillion COVID plan. We had the $2.3 trillion American jobs plan in this speech, $1.8 trillion American families plan in this speech, which adds up to $6 trillion. It is the biggest wealth transfer in the shortest time. This all happened in 3 months. And I think that people are not aware of how you're asking if people will support it. Will Americans support it? If they know what's in it, but who's going to tell them other than you, James?
Well,
the radicalism is celebrated, and it's not really framed that way in the news.
They're calling this $1.8 trillion that you talk about an expansion of the family safety net. What the hell does that mean? What is that?
Okay.
No, what is it? I'm being serious. What is an expansion? What is it?
Okay. the first thing it is 4 more years of indoctrination. You've got 2 years of universal preschool for 3 and 4 year olds, and then 2 years of free community college at the other end. So that's point one. Then there's affordable child care. They're going to cap what percentage of salary that people can pay on child care. Then there's paid medical leave.
Whoa, stop. They're going to cap what?
In other words, if you make $40,000, say, as an example, you can only pay 7% of your salary for child care. They're going to basically mandate that there's going to be a sliding scale based on your salary, what you can pay in child care.
So where is the rest of that? Wait. But if I'm a child care provider, if I have a little job and I say, I put up a sign and I say, bring your little snotty-nosed kids here to spread COVID in my beautiful daycare center, and while you're out trying to find a job because they've shut down your business, so bring your snotty-nosed kids here and I charge $500, you know, a month for each one of your snotty-nosed kids here, right? How does this work? Does the government...
That is my point. They don't know how anything works. Here, can I quote one sentence from this speech?
Yes, please.
Okay. Biden said, there is simply no reason why the blades for wind turbines can't be built in Pittsburgh instead of Beijing. No reason. None. No reason. That was just one sentence in this speech where he basically says that, you know, it should just come. These jobs should just come to America. And he doesn't understand that his own policies, his tax plan, is going to make less jobs being in America. Here's a question for Joe Biden. If you want to know why no turbine blades are made in America, ask GE, because they are the world's largest wind turbine manufacturer. Why don't they make blades in America? It's because of our tax policy. And now Joe Biden wants to raise, as I said to you last time, the corporate tax to 28%, where China's is 25%.
Just
now,
drive more
not
jobs
going to
overseas.
Be any, yes, and Trump lowered it to 21%. So jobs were starting to come back. Well, of course, Biden's reversing that. He said that he told a lot of the world leaders, America is back. And I think Jimmy Carter's America is back. I think that the jobs are going to continue to flee. We're going to have huge inflation based on the policies he laid out, which he said the American jobs plan he's giving to Kamala Harris, his vice president. So what job has she ever created? That's my question for you.
She has created no jobs as far as I can tell, but she really is good at letting innocent people linger in jail. She has some skills.
Prison guards. That is one of her jobs that she's created is prison guards. And other than that, she's in charge of infrastructure and changing all the lead pipes and our power grid.
She's supposed to be in charge of the border. She hasn't shown up there yet.
Right. Well, she is now being delegated to just do the root causes of the border problem. She's not there to solve it. She's trying to figure out the root causes, which she decided was climate change.
The root causes of migration into America are climate change.
Yes, because it's hurricanes and floods, and that's why people are leaving.
You know, Larry Kudlow 2 weeks ago called John Kerry the stupidest man in America. I wonder what he thinks of Kamala Harris. We have to ask him. And Larry Kudlow's show comes right after this on WABC Talk Radio 77. You have to be here. Politico also said that Joe Biden embraced his inner Robin Hood with this speech. He didn't shy away from redistributive governance. In fact, he leaned into it. He wants to redistribute your money, and now they're openly embracing this. The notion of using tax and spend as a political cudgel is really old-fashioned. Said Matt Bennett, but he said what's resonating with Americans right now is that the wealthier are getting wealthier, and it's the same old thing. You know, the rich are getting richer, so we have to take their money. where is this going besides higher taxes? And do you think that this will get through the Senate?
I think quite a bit of it will get through the Senate, because I think that the media is correct. Since they're not explaining what's in the policies, there's not a lot of outrage. People are really focused on one thing right now, and that is becoming free again from the COVID regulations. And so this speech really was not of interest to people. I think I read that 11 million tuned in versus 43 million tuning into Trump. So This has not been focused on. And because Biden is such a sleepy guy in his delivery, it's really, you know, deceptively being advanced by the left under the cover of Biden's moderation, quote unquote. So people are used to Biden and they don't expect he's never been successful at implementing anything. So they really ignore him. And that is, I think, the greatest danger. And the Republicans don't have any effective response other than the usual, this is just tax and spend. I think that Tim Scott's response hit more of where people are. I thought it was a beautiful delivery. It had some spiritual components to it. And there was a love of America in there. And you did not see that in Biden's speech. I mean, he mouthed sort of pro-American, pro-blue collar phrases, but there was no American greatness in the speech whatsoever.
Well, President Biden did say that the January 6th storming of the Capitol was the worst attack on our democracy since the Civil War.
Yes, I think that is the Washington view, which is why we still have troops there, which no one ever seems curious to ask about. How long are the National Guard going to stay in Washington?
Yeah, well, so Pearl Harbor, when we had the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, and our Navy was decimated, some of the bodies are still under the water. If you USS Arizona, the attack on the storming of the Capitol building was worse than that.
And 9/11, don't forget.
And 9/11, the terrorist attack of 9/11. So now what we're supposed to believe, and this is how self-absorbed these politicians are about and of their own importance. This was the worst thing to happen since the Civil War.
Well, they're using it. It's politically advantageous, you know, because I think Biden also said that the greatest threat to us right now is white supremacy and extremism, meaning political extremism defined as conservatives. So
White right wingers are the biggest threat to America.
Yes.
Some of the most patriotic people in this country who believe in this country are now this country's biggest threat, according to Joe Biden and the Democrats.
Exactly. You nailed it, as always.
Uh-huh. Liz Cheney, I'm springing this one on you. And then we got to go to a break. But I want to get what do you think about this war between Liz Cheney, anti-Trump Liz Cheney, and Kevin McCarthy that's going on?
Well, it's a war that has to happen. I think that the anti-Trump forces are so small in this country, but they still wield quite a bit of leadership power within the Republican Party. And that is a fight that the voters have to exert themselves within the party, because it is a Trump, pro-Trump party. So the leadership has to reflect that. Adam Kinzinger, whatever his name is going around Texas trying to find anti-Trump people so that he can win re-election. And
he needs to be primaried and thrown out. I don't want to say anything about Liz Cheney right now facing a primary, but I don't think I have to. Thank you so much, domestic policy advisor Diana Mee. I do want to keep exploring what is in these massive welfare redistribution schemes that the Democrats are proposing. This will change what America is if this is allowed to pass and this goes through. And any Republican that votes for this needs to be tossed out of office. There is or should be no compromise with this, ever. Diana, thank you for being with us. James Golden, WABC Talk Radio 77, crown jewel of American radio. We'll be right back. WABC Talk Radio 77 in New York. New York City, the greatest city in the world. In the greatest country of the world, United States of America. New York City, your emperor, your Lord Most High, Bill de Blasio, is going to allow you, his subjects, his peasants, to return to normal life on July 1st. Please, all of you, get on your knees and genuflect to your Lord Emperor Bill de Blasio. Thank him for his tender mercies. Thank him for looking out for you, the little guy. Don't mind that he's destroyed many of your businesses. Don't mind that if you're a landlord, he's made it almost impossible for you in some cases to pay your own mortgages. Or forget about all that stuff. Just genuflect and be grateful. Justin, where are we going?
Let's go to Michael in Queens.
Queens, we started off WABC Talk Radio 77. Hey, Michael.
Good morning, James. Could you please tell me why is it that every talk show host on every radio station in New York City complains that Biden is not calling his own shots when we all know that when Bush 43 was the president, Cheney was calling all the shots? Nobody seemed to complain then.
Okay, let me address your question. Number one, have you heard me complain that Biden is not calling his own shots?
You might be the only one I haven't heard.
Okay, so then all of the New York radio talk show hosts are not, because I'm certainly not. I don't care who's calling the shots. The shots are what are important to me. These policies are going to destroy more American businesses. They're going to destroy the fabric of American life, the social contract that we've had as a country with our fellow countrymen, where hard work is rewarded. This scheme of redistribution, this continued push to a even bigger, gigantic welfare state than LBJ had with his failed Great Society, is dangerous. Who's
James,
behind it
I agree
doesn't
with that.
Matter. What's,
I agree
what it is all
you
that matters.
You don't have to sell me. I agree
okay.
with that.
So I don't know what other people are doing. Listen to me. That's all. And I don't. And you know what? People are free to do what they want to do on talk radio and to say
we
it.
We should stay with this station all day long, and then you say don't listen to them.
No. I said we should. Look, the talk show hosts on WABC are freaking awesome. Stay here all day long. But if you don't like what people are saying, obviously exercise your freedom or call them and ask them. Don't call me and ask what someone else is doing. I can only tell you what I'm doing. But I love you. Call, and I want you to call back. We got to move. Justin, where are we going? Thank you.
Let's go to Steve in New Jersey.
Steve, WABC Talk Radio 77, what's on your mind this morning?
Mr. Bo James, thanks for taking my call. Let's not forget what's going under the radar here. And I believe it's an impeachable offense. The crisis that Biden has created at the southern border, it has four components to it. I'll be quick. The national security crisis. Not just the drug dealers, not just the gang members. There have been reports by border security that dubious people of Asian character, terrorists are sneaking in. In other words, that's the national security component. There's a humanitarian component. Young girls are being, and children are being smuggled. Young girls are being raped, all right? There's the health component. 10% of them coming, the illegals coming south of the border have COVID. Fourthly, the economic crisis. They're going to become, a lot of these migrants, part of the black market for labor, working, you know, as they say, under the table. That's why they do jobs Americans won't do cheaper. This is, and why the Republicans don't at least bring the resolution on the floor. I realize the votes aren't there. Maybe, perhaps. Push the issue. That man should be impeached for the crisis he's creating. What do you say, Mr. Bo James?
I like this Bo James thing, by the way. Here's what I say. The L.A. Times today says the ongoing family separation, many migrants forced to stay in Mexico by Trump remain apart from their children in the U.S. So that's the big story, according to the L.A. Times. Everything that you just mentioned, these realities, that young girls and women are being smuggled across and being raped, sexually abused, forced into working as sex slaves is ignored. The disease risk to Americans from allowing an open border from COVID, totally ignored. While American businesses are still told to shut down, and at least the Lord Emperor of New York, de Blasio, is going to allow some of them to open back up on July 1st if they still exist. All of the other things that you talked about that are happening, the national security threats from terrorists coming in through open borders, very real. This is all real. You have raised every real issue that is happening on the southern border. The LA Times is still trying to blame President Trump for keeping children separated from their families, which was a bunch of hogwash then and is a bunch of hogwash now. Meanwhile, according to The Hill, the U.S. has banned shrimp imports from Mexico because they're worried about inadequate protections for sea turtles. So let's understand this. We can't control the American border to keep diseases and terrorists out, but the Biden regime can ban shrimp. They can separate American diners from their shrimp from Mexico because of sea turtles. Yeah, baby. WABC Talk Radio 77 in New York. Next hour, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo joins us. You'll want to be here. Stay with us. WABC Talk Radio 77, the crown jewel of American radio. WABC Talk Radio 77 in New York City, the greatest city in the world. This is James Golden, a.k.a. Snerdly, with you. Saturday morning radio extravaganza here on WABC. Today, we have a special treat. I was at lunch earlier this week with a gentleman, Richard Criss, one of my dear friends, who is a former trade negotiator for the United States of America. He's one of those guys that flew all over the world negotiating trade deals on our behalf. And his wife, Sherry, they're just beautiful people. Sherry is also a lawyer, works with the government. And one of the things, Richard now runs a trade association. Unprompted, one of the things he said to me was that, as we were discussing world affairs, that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was the greatest Secretary of State in our lifetime. And ironically, he didn't know that we were due to talk with the gentleman he called the greatest Secretary of State in our lifetime, Secretary Mike Pompeo. Welcome for being with us. How are you, sir? Mr. Secretary, glad to have you here.
I am doing well. It is wonderful to be with you this morning. Those are very kind words, and I'm looking forward to our conversation today. I hope you're doing well, too.
I am. Thank you. And I want to jump right to it, because you delivered a speech in Florida at the Palm Beach Republican Party Lincoln Day dinner that was amazing. President Trump was in attendance, and President Trump spoke after you. And what President Trump said was he was your backstop. You talked about your achievements. And when I say your, I mean the achievements of the Trump administration on foreign policy. And so I'd like for you to spend just a few minutes before we get to John Kerry to highlight what it is that the Trump administration did and what you as Secretary of State did that Americans should know and remember as we now are seeing what is happening on the world stage?
Well, it was a fun evening, and I simply recounted the work that President Trump had done, our team had done, and he gave me the privilege to go do, serving as the Secretary of State. You know, it began with this central thesis that America first is the right answer, that no matter what we were doing, if we were working in Vietnam, we were working with Australia, we were working with African nations, that in the end, our task was to put America first. What that did was it made sure that we had deterrence around the world. People knew we were tough, people knew we were strong, and they didn't challenge us. And that kept us out of wars, or kept our kids, our young men and women serving in the United States military out of harm's way. And then we had a bunch of specific accomplishments, too. The work that was done in the Middle East to generate the Abraham Accords is absolutely historic. It will change the lives of Emiratis. It will change the lives of Israelis and Bahrainis and Sudanese. And it will keep America more secure, too, because there's now friends and partners and allies in that region that are working alongside of each other. So those Abraham Accords were critical. Everyone would remember our visits to North Korea. The president sent me as his first emissary on a secret mission to Pyongyang in Easter of 2018, and we made some progress on working on the challenge that Chairman Kim presents to the world. There's more to be done, but we made good progress. And then who can forget the fact that we, for the first time, acknowledge that China is an adversary that needs to be treated as such. And when they're stealing American jobs, when they're growing their economy on the back of the American worker, President Trump said, we're not going to let that happen. And we countered China on every front. No administration before had done any of those things. And I was proud to be a small part of it.
I want to focus on two of those things just really quickly. The Abraham Accords. People said it was impossible to bring the kind of accords that happened. They said it was impossible. How did you do this?
We took 40 years of failed American policy in the Middle East, and we stood it on its head. For a long time, there was this idea that if you didn't solve the fight between the Israelis and the Palestinians, that you couldn't do anything more. And we said, that's crazy. We're going to try a different way. And we did. We laid out a vision for what it should look like. And then they came to trust us. They knew that I would have their back. President Trump would have their back. And so these leaders, Prime Minister Netanyahu, Mohammed bin Zayed in the Emirates, great leaders in Bahrain, all said, we're going to do this. We're not going to make Israel our enemy. We're going to make them our friend, and we're going to work alongside them. And we'll still try and solve this problem that has been the historic problem, the Palestinian conflict, but we're not going to let that stand in the way of prosperity. And that reconception, that rethinking, that willingness to break glass and reimagine what was possible let us do something that, you're absolutely right. People told us, you guys are crazy. This can't happen. And, of course, it did.
China. Ever since I have been following China as a political force, when I was a kid, of course, the big story was that Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger had opened up relationships with communist China. It was no longer a closed society. And we watched China advance from a undeveloped nation to one of the second biggest economic force in the world. We also watched China manipulate currency. We also watched China dump products into the United States, some of which were defective. We also watched a trade imbalance open up with China that was horrific. We had mouth, mouth, mouth from politicians from both parties complaining about China, but no administration wanted to take China on except for the Trump administration. You went head-to-head with China. You called China out on these unfair currency practices. You actually implemented tariffs that hit China. And China, which is unreported to me, the biggest economic story of the last century and of this century, China backed down. That remains unreported. What you did with China... Am I wrong? We have never seen anything like this. We had the world's two superpowers in a trade war, and the United States won.
I said this a couple years back, and it was not noted. China declared economic warfare on the United States. And for decades, this is Republicans and Democrats both. So this is a partisan thing. For decades, presidents just said, I'm not going to deal with it. We're doing fine. We're going to let them go. Grow on the backs of the American worker and took millions and millions of jobs out of the American heartland. President Trump said that's crazy. He said we're going to do this in a way that's fair and reciprocal. He demanded it, and China backed down. Many of those tariffs remain in place, still generating great benefits for the American workers all across our country. When there were, another front, when there were spies here inside the United States for a long time, we said that's too hard. We, the State Department, closed down the Chinese consulate in Houston. When China refused to acknowledge that they had a problem and covered up the Wuhan virus, President Trump said, that's nuts. We called them out for that. We left the World Health Organization that had been too political and wasn't solving this problem that has now killed millions of people all across the world. We were strong. We countered China in a real way. And it's really important that this continue because this is a years, maybe even decades long confrontation. And the West must win this. The United States must win this. I'm convinced that we will.
Why is the United States media, the mainstream media, so opposed to telling the American citizens what is actually happening with China and American relationship?
Some of the media has been co-opted by China. They have big investments there. Certainly Hollywood, that's the case, right? They make films there. They market and sell films there. So they just it's about money. That's what's held us up in a lot of the confrontations with China these last decades. The second thing is a broader issue, Bo, and you know this. They weren't about to give Mike Pompeo or Donald Trump any credit. So yeah. when we confronted this menace that was challenging people that I hear from all across America, that and we went after it hard, the media wasn't going to give us any credit for it. That's okay. We did it. It was right. We made America better. We made America stronger. And we are all better off for the work that was done.
You wrote an op-ed for Fox News regarding the situation with John Kerry. I want you to explain the op-ed, but first I want to go back 3 days before that op-ed was published to a headline. Pompeo slams Iran news. When I was briefing Trump, Kerry was briefing Zarif. This is unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Yet I can tell you this is true. Secretary Kerry, we knew, was talking to for the foreign minister of Iran, an adversary both that had killed hundreds of American soldiers. And Secretary Kerry chose to befriend this fellow named Javad Zarif. He's the foreign minister of Iran, and he spoke to him a number of times. And I am convinced he was telling the Iranians, just hang on. Pompeo will be gone. President Trump will be gone. And you can survive. And when you do, you'll get a better deal. You'll go back into this little sweetheart deal that we gave you. It undermined what we did. It was deeply unpatriotic what Secretary Kerry did. And he shouldn't have been briefing Zarif while there were others who were in power running American foreign policy.
What should happen here?
Well, I'd start with this. Someone needs to figure out precisely what he said and when he said it and figure out if there's ongoing damage that continues from what he told them. I don't know the details, but we all need to come to understand that. Second, he needs to explain why he chose to do this. And then finally, the American people need to know today, the United States, the same team, Secretary Kerry's people, Wendy Sherman, a fellow named Robert O'Malley, Jake Sullivan, y'all wouldn't know these names necessarily, but these people negotiated the bad deal with Iran. They are in Vienna, Austria today, working to put America back into that deal. That presents real risk to the United States, enormous risk to our friend and ally Israel, and friends, and real risk too to our Arab partners in the Middle East. All the good work that we did in the Middle East risks being undone if they continue to head down this path and give the Iranians a sweetheart deal and tens of billions of dollars again.
I have always not understood and been confused by the Obama administration's embrace of Iran, how we were able to send billions of dollars in cash in the middle of the night to Iran while it was still the number one state sponsor of terrorism around the world, what we thought we would get out of this nuclear deal that Biden and Kerry are so anxious to link us back into. Help me, please. Help me understand What is it that the left sees with Iran that I'm not seeing or that we're not seeing?
Boy, I wish I could help you with that one. Sometimes you can see somebody's argument that disagrees with you, right? You can see their logic. I literally cannot posit a rationale for getting back into this flawed deal that President Trump withdrew from. It will embolden the Ayatollah and the mullahs. They'll continue to punish their people. They'll commit human rights violations. They'll commit terror acts. They'll pay Hezbollah and militias throughout the Middle East to go undermine the very things that we care about and put our military folks at risk. It is incomprehensible. I can't figure out what it is. I don't want to go dark side and attribute some bad motive to them. But when you are supporting the world's largest state sponsor of terror and undermining our friends in Israel, something is horribly, terribly amiss.
I would like to ask you another question, and this goes to your tenure serving America as our intelligence chief with the CIA. Many of us have, I'm speaking for me, I guess I have now a distrust of the intelligence community. I think that there is an ideological war that's being played out, and that's why some of these leaks against President Trump and the Trump administration, the idea that this phony dossier could come from British intelligence and our intelligence didn't jump in and say, wait, this is entirely wrong. And what is going on inside America's intelligence in communities? Is there an ideological war being played out? What's going on?
So I can only speak for the organization that I ran, the Central Intelligence Agency. Most of what you described there came from our FBI. I don't think there's any doubt that there were really bad actors leading the FBI that engaged in behavior that was dangerous and bordered on criminal. We saw what Comey did, what McCabe did. We saw the dossier that they signed off on, or the FISA warrants that they signed off on when they knew that there was something amiss. This is unexplainable other than brutal politics that is the worst of what American intelligence has to be. My observation for the team that I led at CIA is while there are always bad actors, most of these folks were much like our military. You know, a president comes, a president goes, they're going to do their job. They're going to try and deliver exquisite intelligence so the commander-in-chief can make a good decision. We've got folks operating in deep, dark places doing remarkable intelligence collection work. They're a collection of really talented, capable people that are professionals at the CIA, and we need to make sure that whether there are bad actors at the FBI or the NRO or the CIA or any other one of those three-letter intelligence agencies, that we make sure that they never have the capacity to influence policy and alter the very intelligence that the American decision-makers, our presidents, need to make the best decisions for America.
A personal question before we let you go. You graduated number one in your class at West Point. When did you realize that your life was headed towards service? And how does a guy become the number one graduate at West Point?
I can't answer that other than, you know, my mom and dad made sure I studied hard all my whole life growing up. And so I credit my parents for that academic success. I had this incredible, I was blessed. America has so blessed me. This incredible opportunity to go to West Point, to go to the United States Military Academy. And I loved my time there. I'm serving as a young soldier back in the days of the Cold War. And I have always known that America has been so great to me that I had a responsibility to try and give back, to try and serve. And I have been so blessed that I've had these incredible privilege moments in my life to be a congressman and then the CIA director and secretary of state. That public service is something that I think is important for each one of us to do at some place along the way in our life. And I'm just so happy that I had the chance to do that. I hope I served America well in each of those places.
You, sir, there's no doubt that you served America well. And many of us hope that your service to this country is not by any means over. We're looking forward to seeing what you do next.
Thank you, sir. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, arguably one of the best secretaries of state in American history, on with yours truly, James Golden, a.k.a. Snurly, WABC Talk Radio 77. We'll be right back. WABC Talk Radio 77, New York City. Later this evening, Cousin Brucey rocks the house. Music Radio WABC. You have to be here during the week. Check out Charlie Kirk. Check out Greg Kelly. Check out Rita Cosby. Check out the full lineup here at WABC Talk Radio 77. Get the app, WABCRadio.com. Get the WABC Radio app. Keep it with you. Larry Kudlow comes up after me. Larry Kudlow, who recently called John Kerry the stupidest man in America. Yeah. Here's a story from BizPack Review. John Kerry invested in oil gas stocks before joining the White House filing show. Special presidential envoy for climate, John Kerry owned shares of multiple oil and gas corporations prior to joining the White House. This time is the envoy for climate. He had invested in Cabot Oil and Gas, Duke Energy, you know, Duke Energy, the one the liberals hate, Cimarex, Dominion Energy, Xcel, Exelon, Valero, WEC, all of that, according to government ethics findings. He sold off his entire stock portfolio worth between $4.2 and $15 million. Before he came back into the Biden administration. John Kerry served as Secretary of State under Obama, paid $5 million by Bank of America to lead its Global Advisory Council, $382,000 by Deutsche Bank, Waste Management, and Cornell University in speaking fees. The Rise Fund, a firm that invests in renewable energy stocks, paid Kerry $125,000. Look, I don't mind anybody making money. This is America, capitalism. But don't go and rail against how bad and evil these so-called fossil fuel companies are while you're making tons of money off of them. It's just, it's okay, we're used to hypocrites. But this, maybe Larry Kudlow was right. Here's the telephone number, 800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222. You know, every week, I talk about what great programming you have here. And let me just say a word about John. You got to check out Cat's Roundtable here. You know, the management crew here at WABC, I'm back home at WABC after spending the last three decades working with the Rush Limbaugh program and over a decade ago being on WABC on the weekends. This is why WABC is my radio home. I was music director here at WABC back when it was Top 40 music station and then transitioned it into was part of the transition team as we moved into talk radio. What is happening at WABC right now with this current, with the current owner and with the current management team, not to get too inside baseball in radio business is just remarkable. Let me just say this. For those of you like me who love WABC, who grew up with WABC, WABC is part of my life. Since I was a kid, there were two stations, three in New York, that I grew up listening to on a regular basis. I mean, I listened to everything, but a regular basis. And WABC always had that special place in many of our hearts as we grew up through the Beatles. We grew up through the Stones. We grew up through Motown. And WABC was the place where you could always come to for the best music. In fact, there was a jingle, the best music, WABC, you know, and that's what it was, though. But it was not just the best music, the best jocks, guys like Dan Ingram, Johnny Donovan, Ron Lundy. That's what made WABC the most amazing radio station in the world. And WABC is back on track to once again claim the throne as the world's best and most amazing radio station under this current leadership and the current owner. And I just want to thank John, want to thank Dave, and everybody, Chad, everybody who works here, Justin, Ray, all of you guys and gals at WABC for allowing James Golden, a.k.a. Snurdy, to come back home. This is a joy to be with you every single week. If you want to be on the program with us today, 800-848-9222. Larry Kudlow does come up next. John Kerry, the stupidest man in America. 800-848-WABC. Again, your Lord Emperor, His Highness, His Worshipfulness, Mayor Bill de Blasio is going to allow New Yorkers to open on July 1st. Please, on your knees, please, on your knees, genuflect before Most Worshipfulness. Across the river, New Jersey high school teacher was suspended after allegedly cursing at his students. This is from the New York Post. He called George Floyd an effing criminal in a series of vulgar rants. Dickinson High School teacher Howard Zlotkin's alleged meltdown over Zoom was captured by a student and obtained by NBC New York. That's local NBC. If you think I'm privileged, then F you, because my daughter thinks I'm privileged and I don't speak to her, he said, the science teacher said. I hear people whining and crying about Black Lives Matter, but George Floyd was an effing criminal and he got arrested and he got killed because he wouldn't comply. And the bottom line is we're making him an effing hero. Well, one of the parents of a child said, who does that? Who would curse? I mean, I don't even curse at my own daughter. Okay, anyway, he's not going to be teaching science anymore. You court watchers, this is from The Hill, are all abuzz about the possibility that Justice Stephen Breyer is going to retire really soon. And the story says, with the death of liberal stalwart Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg still resonant, a number of court watchers expect that Breyer, who's 82, will announce his departure this summer, clearing the way for President Biden and Senate Democrats to fill his seat. I'm sure Breyer realizes what a blow Ginsburg's non-retirement was and the possibility of ever having an even mildly progressive court in our lifetime, says Dan Coble, a law professor at Capital University. Mr. Law Professor has no clue what is in Stephen Breyer's head. Neither do these other journalists. They don't know whether Breyer is going to retire imminently or not. What this is a whoosh that they're placing, and they do this to try to drum up others to keep wishing it, to put pressure on him to resign. This isn't news. This is like a push poll. Resign, resign, please resign. In Wyoming, Wiggins Construction Company, LLC, is offering customers a free AR-15 rifle with every purchase of a roof installation. I love the way this is reported. The red state is home to one of the least restrictive firearms in the country. You don't need a state permit. It's not required to purchase or transfer a rifle, shotgun, or handgun. And the special promotion from Wiggins Construction began about 2 weeks ago. For every new roof, get a new AR-15. Well, that's certainly marketing. Joe Manchin, senator from West Virginia, says he does not support this idea of D.C. statehood. He doesn't support the bill, even though the issue would give Democrats two senators. In a radio interview, Manchin said he's taken a deep dive with his staff, looking at the conclusions reached by the Justice Department under Carter Reagan administrations, as well as comments from then Attorney General Robert Kennedy. They all determined D.C. statehood would require a constitutional amendment. Anyone that reads the Constitution knows that this would require a constitutional amendment, that Democrats are proposing something with D.C. statehood that is severely unconstitutional, that's a Mitt Romney word, severely unconstitutional. In Florida, Politico says Ron's regime, Florida Republicans, give DeSantis what he wants. And what they're talking about is Governor DeSantis got his anti-riot legislation passed. And believe it or not, there are some liberal groups who want to have, who believe it's their right to riot. So they're challenging that in court. And you also have seen, I think, like Florida implemented some of the same sort of measures that took place in Georgia, which are all designed to make sure that the vote has integrity. Get rid of some of these outrageous ballot harvesting schemes that the Democrats put in place. And so Politico is a little bit upset about all of that. They think that the Republicans in Florida, I guess, should go against their Republican governor and give the Democrats what the Democrat want, what the Democrats down there want, which is the ability to riot without being charged like they do in Portland, Seattle, and other Democrat blue cities, and to allow ballot harvesting as far as the eye can see. New York Post, former Nevada Senator Harry Reid believes that Lockheed, the U.S. defense contractor, Lockheed Martin, may have once had fragments of a crashed UFO in its possession. Harry Reid told the New Yorker he had never actually seen proof of the remnants, but he did try to get approval from the Pentagon to find them. He was told for decades that Lockheed had some of the retrieved materials from UFOs, and he wanted them. James Golden here with you. Give us a call. WABC Talk Radio 77. Time is dwindling. 800-848-9222 is the number to call, 800-848-WABC. We'll be right back. WABC. James Golden, a.k.a. Snerdly. Twist and shout. Justin, time to head to the phones. Who do we have?
Let's do it. We got Sandy in Westchester.
WABC. Welcome, Sandy. What's on your mind this morning?
Oh, thank you, James. Good to hear you. I just have a quick comment. The Democrat Party, the Swamp, that whole crew, they're only for themselves. So anything they do, it's not for us at all, as far as I see it. The only ones for America and Americans are for, were President Trump, Mike Pompeo, you know, and a few other people. But and those Republicans, I think they need a whole new Republican Party. They don't seem to do anything. They just sit there and let everything be done, and they don't help us with anything. Do you see anything different than what I'm saying?
Oh, I think the Republicans do plenty. They make so much money losing. There is so much money in losing. You can lose. Do you know you can lose elections if you're a Republican consultant and end up a multi-millionaire? Do you know that if you're on the Republican side and you sign along with the powers that want cheap labor in American, in America, for American businesses, why, your campaign donations can skyrocket. You'll never have to do anything else again, except just go out and keep raising money to keep opposing what most of the Republican base wants. Do you know, if you hate Trump and you go against everything that President Trump tried to do to make this country amazingly great again, and you live in certain districts, that's a pathway to riches. Because not only will you get some Democrats supporting you, but you'll get some rhino groups like this Lincoln Project to say, wow, you are our kind of guy or gal. So yeah, the Republicans, you know, some of them, now let me be a little more frank. There are about 40-some-odd really conservative Republicans in the House. They're in the Freedom Caucus. But what Republicans, what we all need to come to terms with is that conservatism does not dominate inside the Republican Party. It dominates inside a huge portion of the Republican voting base. Not all of it, but inside the elected offices of Congress, conservatives are still a minority. And that's what it appears when you have President Trump basically embrace conservative policy and push it through. There were as many Republicans trying to stab him in the back consistently, think Paul Ryan, as there were Democrats, because they did not embrace what President Trump was trying to do, or what you, conservative American voters, those of you who are conservative, wanted. Why do you think there was so much opposition to building the wall? They laughed at that. They thought that was a joke. Why do you think there was so much hemming and hawing when President Trump and Mike Pompeo took on China? Go back and recall, there were Republicans who were standing up saying this is a bad idea. Go back to when President Trump withdrew from the Paris Treaty, well, the agreement that was really a treaty that Congress should have demanded be voted on in Congress. He didn't get that much support from Republicans. No. We've got a long way to go with Republicans. James Golden, WABC. We'll be right back. Birthday shout out. Michelle Kirk, one of the most incredible human beings in the publishing world. And my dear friend. We have some minutes left here on WABC. Talk Radio 77. Here's a story. Democrats are pushing President Biden to propose a permanent extension of unemployment bennies In other words, welfare forever. Permanent welfare. Don't get me wrong. People pay into unemployment benefits, but they don't pay into them permanently. This is just amazing. And did you know this? There is a new study that explains why nearly 20% of those people who go for electric cars end up returning to gas vehicles. The real story is that 80% stay with electric cars. But 20% say, Wait, Justin, where are we going on the phones? James Golden, WABC Talk Radio 77. Where to?
Let's go to Michelle. She's upstate.
Michelle, upstate New York. Welcome. WABC with James Golden, a.k.a. Snerdly.
Hey, James. It's a pleasure and an honor to speak to you. And condolences on our beloved Rush.
Amen. And you're very kind, and thank you.
I wanted to kind of speak to what the other caller was saying. I mean, I'm a Republican. I call myself a Republican, but at this point, you know, I was saying to my sister the other day, there's literally like maybe a handful of Republicans that I feel I could trust and that I feel have the American people's best interests at heart. All the rest, I think, are in it for themselves, in it for what they can get, in it for the, you know, the popularity, the money, but it's corruption. It's nothing but corruption. And I see this country going downhill in this first 100 days of Biden that I fear for my country.
Okay, let me address a few things. I understand your sentiment regarding the Republican Party. I think that there has never been a political party that has so large a voting base that is consistently ignored or despised by the leadership of that party as the present day Republican Party. But this is a battle that we conservatives must engage in. We're fighting a two-pronged battle. One is against liberalism, the Biden regime, those people that are trying to move the progressive agenda inside the Biden regime. And by the way, they're doing a really great job of doing that. Our other fight is within our own party. It's an intra-party fight to see who is going to lead this party, whether it's going to be the anti-Trump faction led by people like Liz Cheney and Kinzinger, whether it's going to be the anti-base faction. You know, I loved George Bush 43. I still think he's a very decent man, and I think he tried to do some of the work that needed to be done. But on the other hand, President Bush 43 was out the other day complaining that people in his own party are nativist. And no, we're not nativist. We want the rules of American law enforced. There is a battle between those Republicans in the establishment, like Bush 43, and those of us who are tired of being called names by Democrats and by Republicans that we supported. You know, I held my nose and voted for John McCain. I held my nose and voted for other Republicans. And yet, Republicans, like the Lincoln Project guys, don't hold their nose and vote for candidates that we like. They join the Democrats. Now, Bush 43 said he didn't vote for Trump. He voted for Condoleezza Rice. I love Condi. But really, you couldn't hold your nose? Well, I guess not. Not after the way that President Trump eviscerated Jeb. So we have a real issue in the Republican Party. What are we going to do? The first thing is we have to become activists. We have to take this party from the establishment and from the anti-Trump wing. We have to do that at the voting. We have to do that at voting places all over America. And then we have to continue this fight against liberalism. But do I fear for America? I fear what will happen if some of these policies are implemented. True. But I am also so optimistic about America. And I think that what's happening with Joe Biden and this regime pushing through these massive spending programs where there is clearly no money to spend. We do not have $6 to $10 trillion to spend on welfare programs. Where is the money coming from? We don't have it. We don't have and don't want the kind of cancel culture the left is trying to impose on us. So Americans are seeing this, and we have reason to be hopeful. Justin, time for one more. Where do we go?
You got it. Let's go to Susan in Northport.
Northport, how are you, Susan?
Hello, Mr. Golden. How are you today?
I am well, thank you. God bless you. Thank you for joining us. What's on your mind?
Well, it's my pleasure, and I'm honored to be here with you today. And I really don't have a question because I just wanted to tell you how much I enjoy your show. And I'm glad I got to close the show today because you've given me a lot of hope just listening to you and all your shows. And really, when things were down, I felt that, you know, about how everything's going today, you lifted our spirits up. And I just wanted you to know that. And I had one more request. I would like to ask you that lovely song by Stevie Wonder, Love's in Need of Love Today, with the beautiful words you put with it. I've listened to it many times. If you could do that again sometime and where I could get a copy of that.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. You made my day. Thank you, Susan. Listen, everybody, I'm glad she mentioned that. Now, I don't ever want to make it sound like a cliche, but I do believe this, and I believe it strongly. Love is the strongest power in the universe. If you look in any religious context, you'll see one thing. In Christianity, it's God is love. You can look elsewhere. You can look through Sikhism, Jainism. You can look through Buddhism. You can look through Islam. You can look through any Confucius. You see the same thing, that this power, this force that created not just this world, but all of the world, is essentially love. This is the power. Those of us that love America, those of us that love our families, those of us that love God, we have the power to create change. And we have the obligation to do that. James Golden, WABC. See you next week. God bless you, and God bless this beautiful country of ours.